This episode of How to Save the World is sponsored by Ateek, a New Zealand zero-waste beauty company on a mission to rid the world of plastic waste.
Check them out at ateek.co.nz. That's Ateek, E-T-H-I-Q-U-E. Hello and welcome to Fashion Week on How to Save the World. My name is Tim Batt.
And I'm Waveney Worth.
And this is a podcast dedicated to trying to find the easiest way to turn your life a little bit more sustainable. Waveney Worth has been whatever you want.
Tim Batt.
Batt has been walking the walk for a decade now.
Yeah, about that.
And I, Tim, have been doing it for just a short while. Well, I'm still kind of starting the little baby steps.
It's such a journey. I'm still taking the baby steps.
We're all on the walker, as Miriam Akamo would say.
Yeah,
and
nice.
We're just, you know, we're all on the journey together. So it's the first day of Fashion Week today, so we thought we would dedicate the episode this week to talking about the environmental and human impacts of the fashion industry.
Yeah.
It's always existed as long as there's been people, but it has changed a huge amount very recently. And there's huge environmental consequences to how it has changed. And you might notice a little bit of change in sound quality today. That's because we are recording on location in my backyard instead of in the studio because it was a nice day.
Sunny. The other thing that's changed heaps about fashion, I reckon, Tim, is not just how it's all done and how it's all made, but our attitude to it as well and how we feel about fashion and or our clothing. Like, it's gone from being just something that covers us to keep us warm to this thing that expresses who we are and says so much about us, especially as our world's getting really quick. It's like this instant way to reach someone, and it's like an instant language.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as things have become more sort of individualist and consumer orientated, and there's good and bad things that come with that. That's definitely fashion has played a big role in that. Do you want to take us through what we are going to cover this episode, roughly?
Yeah, roughly.
And then we'll dive in.
We have got
what's the roadmap?
The road. Well, the first thing I thought we could set the scene, look at the origins of fashion and particularly fast fashion.
Mm.
And you've been doing a bit of research on that, eh?
I have.
Yeah. And then getting into the production and of the fabric and the clothing. So sort of like the true cost of that. Then disposing. So basically just taking us through the life cycle of a garment. And then, of course, we're going to finish with the solutions.
Yes.
And actually, this is a particularly weighty topic with quite a few mind-blowing issues.
Yeah.
Lots of things lurking behind the scenes. But conversely, it's also a topic with heaps and heaps of potential. And there's just so many. Like, the solutions I have are as long as my arm. There's just so many cool things that we can be doing.
There is so much opportunity. Because at the end of the day, this isn't one of those things like waste that we'll be able to knock out. Like, fashion will exist.
Yeah.
Fashion will always exist. And fashion's a cool thing. Fashion's fun.
Yes, fashion is fun. And that's the perverse like upside of like this really high turnover we've got, is that it is fun. You can get so many,
and it can still be fun. It can still be fun and more environmentally friendly than it is. But yeah, it's an industry that's always going to be there. So how do we kind of change its trajectory? Because at the moment, it's not so good.
Mm.
So very broadly, and look, I have to confess, I am not a fashion person. I'm a person who wears clothes that I bought, you know, for about 3 or 4 years, and then a hole develops large enough that it's embarrassing to go in public with it, so I'll buy something to replace that item. But I have to confess, I'm not like a hugely fashion forward kind of a person. My wife is very fashionable.
And as long as there's one in the family.
I think you need someone looking after you.
Yeah,
I need my minder.
There needs to be someone, yeah.
So I guess the origins of this is talking about how fashion has changed quite recently, and it has, because up until quite recently, when we talked about the seasons of fashion, when you talk about a designer releasing seasons of a collection, it was almost literally seasons. Initially, there was only two a year.
Yeah.
And then there was four. It followed the calendar. And then along came this thing called fast fashion, which has only happened in my lifetime. It was only in the 90s that this happened. And a couple of things had to come together to create fast fashion. But first, just to sort of have a baseline, in case there's any questions about what fast fashion is, it's basically the uber cheap constantly replenishing different designs at these massive outlet stores. The biggest ones are Zara and H&M, Top Man and Top... Top Shop. Thank you. is the big one in the UK, and they're all designed around the idea of getting you in the store, buy a ton of clothes, and you won't wear them for very long, but that's okay because they were so cheap. You can come in next week, find different designs that are even more up to date, and just replace it with that.
And I don't think that's anyone's intention when they're shopping. It's that you go in there and you just think, oh, you fall in love with this piece of clothing, and the fact that it doesn't go through the wash well, or it just, there's all of these things that suddenly you don't like about it, or you don't look as good as you thought you might in it. And next thing you find yourself, it's just that the cost of it is so low.
That's so true. I don't think anyone goes in going, I'm going to throw this in a bin in 2 months.
But that I want this to be disposable. But it's
just absolutely what is happening,
that's
though.
What happens,
so much is getting thrown out.
And not just to pick on those guys either, because it's so ubiquitous. There's like,
it is, but to be fair, I'm not super knowledgeable in this, but the last couple of days I've been doing a lot of reading and watching the different like interviews and docos about this, and it does seem like, you know, the big culprits really are huge, like the giants are monolithic.
But
in
if you
space.
Go into a mall, you'll hit some pretty big brand retailers that can put out a t-shirt for $5, $10 bucks, or even 30 is still, that is way cheaper than it should be, I think, to reflect the value of it.
So the things that kind of came, the ingredients that came together to give us fast fashion, first, I think globalism played a lot to do with it. So that kind of global supply chain, developing countries, there's actually a stage in sort of modern economics theory, I think it's called the t-shirt phase. So it's basically developing countries go through these different phases where to sort of increase their infrastructure, both physical and their kind of people infrastructure. They go through these different phases of manufacturing and things that they can make eventually. I guess in this way of looking at things, the pinnacle is having like a really science and technology ready country.
You get there
like
in
America.
The end, but you've got to go through the sweatshop first.
Exactly. That's the idea. So, which is, it actually is kind of bullshit, because a lot of these countries get trapped in that phase forever.
Yeah,
really.
We know now that.
The other thing that was an essential ingredient to give us fast fashion was the advent of polyester, because we kind of forget, but it's quite a new material. It's made from petroleum, and it's a synthetic blend that is in most clothing now, and we'll probably talk a little bit later about associated with that. But it has, what it did is it basically unlocked a world of cheap clothing manufacture. So we were using developing countries with these increased globalized supply chains, so that we were able to use places like Bangladesh and China to produce, and off the sweat and toil of essentially slave labor, incredibly cheap textiles processing and clothing, and using these new materials which are very durable and very cheap, but also incredibly energy intensive and really bad for the environment at the other end of it.
I remember that myself.
It coming out?
Well, just when I was a kid, it was just right at the end of the New Zealand textile industry collapse, and that generation of parents were expecting to be making the clothes for themselves and their kids, because that's what everybody had done prior to that. To buy something new was a big treat because it was expensive, because you're paying people wages that you'd be happy to live off yourself. So if it takes 5 hours to make something, then you're paying, you know, a decent amount of money for that.
Yeah.
And so I just have those early memories of my mother making sweatshirts and a lot of knitting and sewing dresses, and then that all
stopped. Everyone had a sewing machine, eh?
But by the time I got to high school, the laws had changed. We had more open trade. The sweatshops had really started to get going.
Yeah.
And then fast forward 20 years and things have just gotten faster and faster.
Yeah. This is a really modern thing that's important to keep remembering that. There was an interesting stat. A lot of the facts that I will be sort of regurgitating are from Elizabeth Klein, who's this journalist who is a real fashionista, and she used to kind of be addicted to shopping and was very engaged in this fast fashion mode of things, and then started looking into it and now has written two really excellent books about how it's terrible for the world and particularly for the environment. And she's a real advocate for getting people out of that cycle and trying to change these big global brands' way of doing things. So yep. She found this interesting stat that in 1938 in America, unionized dressmakers were making $630 a week in modern dollars. So, and that's like a very sort of comfortable living wage, you know, doing the quick math, it's like a little over $50,000 a year US in modern dollars. So, and if you think about what that compares to now, right now, globally, one in six people work in apparel, 80% of them are women, and 98% of them are receiving less than a living wage. 98% are receiving less than a living wage.
I came across a stat that for a worker, a beginning worker in Bangladesh, which is like the bottom of the pile, $10 a month.
And there's no mobility around it as well. There is whole generations and whole countries being trapped in this cheap labour phase. Bangladesh has long had this problem where it sort of got into that phase of textiles manufacture. And it, despite the workers trying to unionise and they're trying to increase conditions and stuff, they can't, because they know that if they do, they'll lose their industry to whoever can treat their workers the shittiest after them. So it's an incredibly sad cycle of poverty that gets created at the bottom of this kind of chain when you're looking at these really cheap t-shirts and stuff.
Yeah, like it's really hard to unionise in any circumstance, but basically this is a global phenomena that these workers would have to overcome to successfully unionise.
Totally. And just another little stat, textiles waste going to landfill has increased 40% just in the decade between 2006 and 2016. So this isn't like in the last 40 years or whatever.
How much percent? 40.
It's increased 40% clothes going to landfill just in the decade between 2006 and 2016. So like it's a problem that we have had for a little while, and it's accelerating. Like
that's
it's
the thing, worse. Actually. And
we're
I guess,
in the midst of it not getting better right now.
Yeah, we're in the midst of this acceleration, and you would think it was already as fast as it could get.
Yeah. So many of these environmental issues, it's crazy to find that out, that we're like carbon emissions are going up right now. It's nuts.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's an off-quoted fact, which I saw a little bit of pullback to, but I think it's probably right. According to the Danish Fashion Institute, fashion, or textiles, clothing, is right now the number two most polluting industry in the world, second only to oil.
Yep. And I found that same statistic from somebody else, so I can concur.
Yeah. I think it's quite tricky to tease out, because there's a lot of inputs to it, because it involves transportation.
There's so much material going around.
It involves agriculture. It's cotton being grown and farmed. It's animal livestock to get the leather. There's all in dyes. So it's like petrochemicals and polyester and all of these blends. There's so many different.
Should we get into some of that
Absolutely.
Stuff now?
Yeah, let's get into it.
If we look at the cost of fabric and clothing production, I guess we're looking at the synthetic fibres, the cotton growing, human cost. So maybe we start by looking at the cotton.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing, because it to me, my first feel look of it all is that it's this natural thing, which I like. I'm always looking for natural fibers.
We're told that's the good stuff, right?
Yeah, but
natural fibers.
It's like very similar to the stuff we've said before about farming food, just the high rate of pesticides or other farming practices that might not ultimately enhance the soil. Farming cotton turns out to be one of the most devastating things that you can be doing on your land. It's a really, really high user of pesticides and water. So it is in about almost half of our clothing. So it's by far the number one natural fibre that's used. And it's mostly produced in well, not here is probably the quickest way of saying it, but in developing countries, China's the number one cotton producer, which is interesting because I hadn't come across that much.
I wouldn't, yeah, I don't think, even of think of China as a cotton producer.
It turns out that they actually use most of their cotton. They're so big that they use most of it right. domestically. And then India comes in there, USA, Pakistan, Brazil, Uzbekistan. Plus, there's a lot of countries that are into it. So most of the global cotton harvest comes from irrigated land, and it is the one of the most thirsty crops. Or actually, this is because you know what was your main reason for going vegan?
Water usage.
Water usage. I remember you saying that. And so when I saw cotton on the top of the charts, so for 1 kilo of crop, it requires, well, anywhere between 7,000 and 29,000 liters of water. So I was, and that is by far the most crop hungry thing. So I was like, well, how does that compare to beef and lamb? And it's comparable. So
potentially double beef.
Yeah, exactly. Looking at your little numbers there. Beef is 15 and lamb's 10. So
and cotton's up to 29.
Up to 29, yeah.
Man, I hate putting too many numbers on a podcast, but for reference, so that's cotton is at the top of the thirstiest thing you can be doing with your land, and it might be twice the amount of beef.
Well, because it's such a range, and actually that comes through with different countries. So US right. is much more water efficient. They're right. about 8,000 litres, but India, by contrast, is on 22,000 litres, wow. Which is really sad, actually, because India's kind of giving cotton it's drinking water. There's so many people in India that don't have enough drinking water.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now, what was it? Most of that cotton water could supply 85% of the population with drinking water.
With the cotton thing, how it's so like thirsty. Is there good cotton though?
Yeah.
Is there a good way to do
you can,
cotton?
You can grow cotton organically, which uses a lot less water and absolutely no pesticides at all. So organic cotton is, if you can find something that has got that tag on it, that, and I can tell you now from trying, it's pretty impossible if you've just gone to the mall and you're eagerly looking at tags on things, hoping to find organic cotton, that it's only 1% of the world's production.
Wow.
And the way to get it is
right
on,
now.
Yeah.
We can change it.
It is growing really fast, which is awesome. Mm. And just finding it online. But we can get into that too, because there's so many ways, little life hacks of finding it and getting some cool stuff that you
love. Love a life hack, Wave.
Yep. Yeah.
Love a life hack.
Better than another statistic, Tim. Say statistic heavy episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. But pesticides.
Hate them.
Yeah.
Not pro.
No.
I'm against.
Okay, good. Me too. It is. Are you ready for this? This is a...
I'm sitting down.
This is a sticky statistic.
Uh-huh.
It is one of the most chemically dependent crops in the world.
Oh, no. Cotton is.
Yeah, cotton is. Yeah.
Shoot.
So it's small in terms of what we're mostly using our cropland for. It's like only about 2%. Of our cropland is in cotton, but it swallows up 25% of all insecticides.
Holy shoot.
Yeah.
Man.
It's like, that is enormous.
That's crazy.
It's huge, yeah. So basically, there's some really full-on things happening in terms of ecosystem poisoning and extinction.
So is that why? Because I keep kind of tripping over this online in my research that a lot of the topsoil is kind of being killed and destroyed. There's all these important kind of
microfungal stuff.
Like a whole ecosystem that exists in this topsoil, which is completely essential for the grass and everything we do
on top of it. Yeah.
That's been completely destroyed. And that's due to the huge amounts of pesticides
being used. Yeah. It's really sad, actually. It's kind of, I've heard it referred to as an ecological narcotics tragedy. Because it's like, if you think of the comparison there, it's addictive because you have this kind of increase of all the good things at the beginning, so profitability and harvest, but then it actually just slowly decreases over time and the pesticides get less and less effective. So to sort of keep up with yourself, you've got to keep putting more and more on the land.
And meanwhile, you're poisoned. Man, you're that actually, is like heroin. That's a good parallel. Its effectiveness goes down, you have to keep topping it up, and all the while it's kind of slowly killing the body.
Yeah, and the actually literally too, because the farmers that are caught up in this, they're actually building up debt, having to pay the pesticide companies, and then it gets it's often to the point where they end up not being able to pay their bills, and they actually end up just drinking the pesticide and killing themselves.
Wow.
Yeah. It's apparently the largest recorded wave of suicides in human history is from Indian farmers and farming cotton. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty.
That's
and this
super
is our
gnarly.
Standard. This is the standard stuff you just buy in the mall, or you go, oh, that's a good cheap T-shirt, and we just. Well, to be fair, we don't have that visibility, but we're just not connecting with the reality of what it is for people to be farming it. And the other thing that goes along with it is the huge, like, it's bad enough here. Like, there's a really good movie called True Cost, which, if you haven't seen, that just covers the global fashion industry. And they've got a really good segment there about some of the really high rates of cancer in the US where they farm cotton. But there's also, that's where things are regulated. And then in India, in the Punjab, which is their big cotton growing district, they use 50% of all the pesticide in India in that one region. And you just go into so someone's done a study on the effects of pesticide, and they found that they go into just like a regular village, and you've got 70 to 80 kids in every village with severe mental and physical handicaps, and they've got these dramatic rises in birth defects and cancer and a mental illness as well. Oof. So I don't know.
It makes sense though. It's because the whole point of pesticides is that it kills things on contact.
Yeah.
So it's like, that is going to be detrimental to human health as well, because its very purpose is to kill living things on contact with it.
We're not different to that, to the stuff. Yeah. But, and then it's just, well, you know, the studies that they do to say, oh, you know, it's okay, really are based on how much you might have contact to if you used it once or something like that. It's where it all accumulates, and so it's really, well, what are the effects over your lifetime? And then you take away the controls that we have. And then you go to these developing countries, and then often they don't even have the awareness around the safety issues either. Mm. And then the sort of putting those two assets, and it's not just cotton, by the way, either.
Yeah,
it's,
we've focused a lot on cotton far.
Yeah, like leather tanning, the tanneries. Mm-hmm. They're any leather buying new, I would definitely try and avoid. And then even fabric dyeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't do much research into that, but it's very similar stuff. It's just discharging pretty toxic stuff into waterways, sometimes into basins that are supporting populations over a million people, and they can't drink that water anymore. Another awful disaster, but in quite a different way, that I came across, I kind of really vaguely rang a bell. And that's the Aral Sea. I don't know if I'm saying that right. It's A-R-A-L, Aral Sea.
I'm not going to be able to correct you on that, sorry, Wade.
I'm going to give it away as soon as I say, but it was the fourth largest lake in the world. It was the most significant body of water for the Central Asian region, which is, it was really important oasis for Silk Road. And so that sort of area. And it's actually, so fourth largest lake just a few decades ago, it has literally almost disappeared. And directly as a result of the cotton industry.
Whoa.
It is like, you can just imagine the equivalent in the States with those Great Lakes just completely disappearing. So that used to be obviously a really significant lake for everybody. And you know, villages that had like 30,000 people involved with fishing and canning and that sort of stuff. Yeah. And there was this one particular village that had all of this stuff going on. They are now 250 kilometres from the shore of where the lake is now.
And that used to be coastal.
That used to be coastal. Just like we're talking sort of 15, 20 years ago.
That
it's just
nuts.
One generation.
the scale of this thing. And this is the thing, because our behavior has changed so much. It's the whole fast fashion thing. Like how I was saying that Seasons went from sort of a designer putting out a collection twice annually to being four times in line with the Seasons, and now it's literally multiple times a week.
Oh,
for example,
man.
That H&M comes in. There was a stat, I think it's, they, I think it was H&M. Yeah, it is H&M release. And I'm sure that this is emblematic of others as well in this space. Hmm. 500 different items a year. So more than one a day are being brought into the shop. So it's this constant replenishing of different designs on the shelves of this super cheap product. And like the thing is as well is that it's tricky with this episode because we want to give you the info, the real truth of what's going on. It's heavy, and I know that it can be quite overwhelming, and especially if you enjoy fashion, like this is a lot to take in. And the thing is with fast fashion, I kind of get it as well, because even though I'm not a fashion person, I can totally see the appeal of, previously there were all of these fantastic clothes which were out of most people's reach in the middle class or lower middle class, and suddenly you've got these shops that open up which go, hey, just because you're not uber rich doesn't mean you can't look fantastic and wear the same stuff as the superstars, you know, it looks exactly the same. So there's kind of, in that way it's kind of this democratization of fashion, which is great. But what we need to keep in mind is there is a huge environmental and human cost at the other side of that transaction as well. And it's just
well
in
said,
this
Tim. Yeah.
Change in behavior of just constantly shopping. And there's been so much time and energy putting into psychologically training us to shop all
That's
the time.
That's so true. Because it's hard for us to remember, but we just have to ask the generation before us. They had to be trained out of fixing things.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes against the grain to just throw something out that you know is perfectly good.
Yeah. And it's as a result of making things so cheap that you wouldn't even consider.
It just comes down like this. It's the cheapness. Mm. It just comes down to how there's just no opportunity cost for us. Like $10 is for, you know, a piece of clothing that we really, really like and think is really cool is such a small amount to pay.
Yeah.
And we've got this huge disconnect with even the skill it's taken to make it. I don't know, what do we think, that it's made by machines? Apparently, the reason why fashion is the most labor-intensive industry in the world is because it's human hands. Like there's these people that we don't know that are touching and are making our clothing. We don't, they've all got faces and dreams and personalities, and we don't think of it.
Yeah.
I've never thought of it before. I'm only just thinking of it now.
Yeah, same.
Like, you know, because I've just got my head in it.
Yeah, Wave and I aren't holier than thou. For sure. This is just because we're fresh off the back of a few days of like intense kind of research around this issue. But it's really making me think of a lot of stuff that I'm doing.
Even because I do a lot of op shopping, and I guess, yeah, I had just never thought of it. Like, the clothes I'm wearing right now have all been touched by these people. Like, human hands that have made them, yeah.
Just another point on the fast fashion thing as well. So there is, and Elizabeth Klein, the journalist I mentioned before, who's written the two great books about this phenomenon, it has talked quite a bit about this. There's been some huge moves by the big fast fashion brands to introduce quote-unquote sustainability program. So like recycle bins where you can come in, drop your clothes off, get a $5 voucher per, I think it's done by weight, which just goes to show how, like, you know, disposable they're commoditizing these items. And so she's kind of dug into it, and it turns out that less than 1% of those donated fibers can be are recycled. There was a quote here by someone who's in charge of the waste management programs for a city in Montreal, I believe. I'll just try and find it now. And she said that it takes 12 years to recycle something that it would take H&M like 48 hours to bring into the store and sell.
Mm.
So there's just no incentive for them to really be dealing with this ethically. And Elizabeth Klein actually said H&M at the top of the food chain in terms of sustainability. They score the highest among these big fashion retailers, and what they're doing is greenwashing. So can you imagine everyone else doesn't even make the moves? She did point out that Levi's is doing some interesting stuff around water usage, really dedicating some R&D dollars to try and bring that down. But
you have to be
really careful about how these brands are they're pumping out advertising and PR materials around how sustainability is a big concern of theirs, and they're introducing recycling programs and stuff. And frankly, from the bits that I've seen of people who are critically looking at these programs, they're almost totally BS. The whole chain of their industry is not helpful, and that's the thing that needs to change.
And recycling, for me, that is such, in the context of your clothing, is just such a red flag. It's like, because there are some things that we should just be thinking of as a bit more permanent than, you know, it's that classic, we've talked about it before with recycling, how you've got a perfectly good glass bottle, but instead of using it again, you just smash it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we had a different system, it could have lasted you for actually 100 years or indefinitely, really, until you've broken it. But we used to care for our clothing. A while ago, my mother and I were looking through photographs on my dad's side of weddings and things, like quite old photos, and we came across this photo of my dad's grandmother, and Mum's like, oh, I think she's wearing the same dress in these two photos. And then we only had three photos of her, and they're all sort of in the crowd at weddings, so she's got her best dress on, and these three photos span decades. And we looked really, like, we've got the magnifying glass out, looked really carefully. I'm like, it's the same dress.
Amazing. Yeah. That was her good dress.
That was her good dress. And, you know, she had a little frill on the bottom of it that could be re-sewn and taken off, and that could get recycled or whatever. But, like, this idea that, I'm doing the right thing because I've worn my T-shirt now for, on average, we use things for 3 years, but that actually includes the entire life cycle of it. So
when it's made,
from when it's bought to when, so maybe you op shop it, and then somebody else wears it, and then else wears it, and then it's 3 years in total. So your average person who's buying things new would have something for a lot less, and to be like, oh, it's okay because I can put it in this recycling bin, is actually like just making things worse because it's taking any sense of
extending the life cycle of
that,
it.
Well, no, just our understanding that this is perhaps not a great thing.
Yeah.
it just all goes out the window because we've got this annoying little sort of green light that switches off all the logic in our brain. We'll say, oh, it's okay, I've recycled it.
Yeah.
But
there's so many clothes being thrown out. The example I saw was in New York City, that there are companies now that are setting up businesses that are roaming around just collecting clothes that have been thrown in the trash to recycle them to turn them into insulation for like pillows and mattresses and stuff. Yeah. It is crazy. And just, I remember as well, like, so polyester is in most stuff unless you actively look at the labels and try and avoid it. One of the really, there's a few quite bad things about polyester. One is that it's super energy intensive to make. And the other is that when you wash it, little microplastics come off of it and wash out of your washing machine into the water cycle, the water, what do you call that?
Because we've
downstream.
Kind of, we've kind of ruined it for everyone now with cotton.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, oh, maybe a polyester shirt's the answer.
Yeah, polyester's really not good.
Apparently it's got double the carbon footprint of a cotton shirt.
There you go.
Yeah.
So if it's between the two, go cotton. I didn't look into this enough, unfortunately, but do you know anything about linen?
Oh, linen is heaps better than cotton.
This is what I got the sense of, and it's made from flax, apparently.
And hemp is really good, too.
Yeah, man, we need to get into hemp. Now I speak my language. That stuff lasts forever.
It's good, it's good stuff.
I don't know if this is true, but I'm going to share a conspiracy theory with you that I read online many years ago. I'll see if I can remember it right. That one of the main reasons that they had this big campaign against marijuana in the States and the whole war on drugs. One of the early origins of that was apparently it was Levi's that did it. because they were making jeans originally out of hemp, and they lasted so long that people buy a pair and they'd last for years. And then they switched to denim, which wears out
quicker.
And so they had to kind of like get people away from hemp because it lasts so long that people would only buy one, you know, every 5 years instead of three or four or five pairs. And so they kind of like introduced this whole reefer madness, wacky backy, marijuana will make you, you know, do crazy things.
Because they're completely different plants. That's the hilarious thing about it, is that these poor, apparently it was in the States. I think we may have been watching the same videos. Apparently in the States, all the farmers.
Well, maybe it's just true.
They all had hemp. It was just part of how they had the plants so that they could make their ropes. And we're going way back, like 100 years before you could just go down to the shop and buy any of that stuff. And it was just one of the most common plants because people needed the fiber for it.
Super strong, super good, but just got totally vilified. Mm. And apparently a big part of that was companies wanting to sell denim because it can wear out way quicker. And
isn't it bizarre? Got to buy more. It's so sad that as we're getting closer and closer to the brink of using up all of our resources, that we are actually getting just better and better at extracting them, pushing. Just, you know.
Things are turning though. So did you want to talk about the life cycle of the garment
quickly? Well, with the synthetics,
start getting a little lighter on this and focus on some solutions.
With the synthetic stuff, you mentioned the microplastic. So just to touch on that, clothing and textiles are the number one source of microplastics in the ocean.
Rats. Da-da-da-da. Here I was thinking it was straws from the cafe.
Which you've already on top of, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, feeling good about yourself.
They did it for me. Cafes took care of that.
Even better. And when we just do a wash of clothes, that can release about 700,000 particles of plastic from the synthetic fibres.
It all goes somewhere, folks.
Yeah, this is the thing. It doesn't go away. It just goes through the waterworks and into the oceans. I think there's a few filters along the way, but basically the plants haven't been designed to deal with the huge quantity. Mm. And that we're talking about some very, very small fibres that can't be seen by the human eye. So you think, oh, well, what does it matter?
And it's also not biodegradable at the end of the day.
No.
Like it's going to get down to a certain point of smallness and then just remain.
It gets ingested. It gets incorporated into living organisms. That plastic has a crazy quality of attracting other toxins to it.
Right.
So it actually starts off fairly inert, but then gathers all of the other toxins that we've released through pesticides or leads or heavy metals. They collect them to the plastic particle. And
ooh, that's not good.
So
Death sponge,
yes. So it is a good thing to avoid. In summary. Mm. So I think,
and it makes you sweat more too.
I don't like the feel of it. I don't like the static, and
I'm wearing a synthetic jacket right now. This has got polyester.
Actually, this is probably polyester.
But
too.
As we sort of transition into the more solutions-y bit, in my defense, if I can speak on my own behalf, in defense, Your Honor, I like wear the ever loving crap out of my clothes.
That is a very good defense.
I have one of these jackets. I wear this jacket almost every day. I was in the market for a light jacket a year and a half ago because I didn't have anything for normal Auckland weather, which is like, it might do what it's doing today, which is kind of rain a little bit, but be quite warm.
Yes, if we started this episode right now, we would have gone inside, eh? It's gone all cold.
That's the subtropical climate for you. But my point being, so I knew what I wanted to get. I wanted to get a light jacket and I bought it. I wear it all the time and I'll probably keep wearing this for another like couple of years. I really don't have a lot of, I have a bit of clothes, but I don't have a ton of clothes, really.
I think that's something guys are better at.
Yeah, well, and it's also like, don't think that it's, you know, all your fault. This is something that we're all having to fight against because there are some very invested money interests who have brainwashed us into thinking that the way things are right now is normal and the way that they should be in terms of like particularly women have to constantly refresh their fashion and style. there's a real issue at the moment by all of the problems we're describing at the moment around fast fashion being exacerbated by social media, Instagram influencers who there's like this genre of videos that I hadn't heard about. I think they're called haul videos.
Oh, like yes.
H-A-U-L, where they've got like $100 and they go to Top Shelf.
And they get all excited
Top Shop.
About the...
Is that a little I know about this stuff? Top Shop, and like how great a wardrobe can you create for $100? And it's just encouraging this... disposable clothing sort of idea.
And there's the other thing is that we have been told through those marketing messages that if you buy into this and if you look good, then that will be solving these issues that you have in your life, and
absolutely.
You'll be more liked or more well loved or whatever your phobias are.
It's
the opposite.
But like, there is something, you know, there is something to being presentable and wanting to be kind of the best possible version of yourself you could be, and I totally get that.
Absolutely, but I don't think that's the bar that we're at now. Like, as a society, we're just becoming more. Again, you're like, where does it end? If you compare the generations and how each generation's just a little bit more focused on their image and their, like, a classic that I've seen in my lifetime is with guys, like the whole metrosexual thing. Like, guys just didn't used to care at all about. They didn't have sort of fancy haircuts or trim their beards, or it just was just totally off the radar. And now there's a whole heap of, say, skin products for men, and just the whole, like, the sort of the ante gets upped every generation.
Yeah, and it's complicated because in some ways I think that that's cool from a social point of view, that guys can't, they have a whole other spectrum of options open to them if that's stuff that they want to do. But it's just, the problem is it's all being packaged by people making money off it,
yeah,
and usually
yeah.
really bad for a lot of workers often at the end of the supply chain and for the environment as
yeah.
well.
And I guess actually that's what I was coming back to, is that as the stuff becomes a bigger focus in our lives through consumption and focusing on image, it's statistically tied to anxiety
yeah.
and depression and lots of other
that
unhappiness statistics, yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Etique. Etique is a New Zealand natural beauty company that stopped over 3.3 million plastic bottles going to landfill. That is a lot, eh?
That's a lot. Their gorgeous hair, face and body wash products are mindfully packaged in biodegradable and compostable materials because Etique are dedicated to building a better world.
Etique's products are all certified animal cruelty free, made of only plant-based and vegan ingredients, and they're kind to your wallet because they last 2 to 5 times longer than bottled beauty products.
Get yourself or someone you care about some Etique today by going to etiqueworld.com.
And that's Etique, E-T-H-I-Q-U-E. It's French, I think. But let us turn to solutions and bright, happy stuff. Because the good thing is, while I was looking at this issue and doing all this reading and stuff, there's so many great brands that are popping up now all over in like local locations. There's so many great New Zealand brands that are popping up that have a real system focused dedication and commitment to being more sustainable and better for workers.
Absolutely. People that have started their journey at that point, rather than having to sort of go at it backwards, they've gone, we want a solution, so how can we go about creating a company that's going to be the solution.
Up.
Exactly, yeah. If you're wanting just a one-stop shop, I can really highly recommend, we're so lucky to have it actually, the Good On You app, which is, I think, the world's global leading source of information on these supply chains for all of the big companies. And they've got a New Zealand version, so you're
awesome.
Able to check out what's going on in New Zealand. So you just download the app. Good On You. You can use it in different ways. The way I typically use it is by putting in the brand, and then it will give you a rating from... I think it's like something like we wouldn't use it through to great.
Mm-hmm.
Really simple, really easy to understand. And if the company that you liked is not really that great, they actually give you alternatives and can suggest brands that are
great.
Really good in that space. Yeah, they're cool. Because it's like, oh, well, if you like the look of that, then here are some others that are sort of similar. So that... it's just a big corner cutter. It saves having to do your research yourself on...
That's so great.
It's so good.
At the risk of highlighting just one company as well, one that kept coming up for me was Patagonia.
Ah, yes.
They seem like they are all in on the sustainability thing.
And the thing I like about them is their advertising campaigns basically saying, don't buy our stuff.
Yeah.
You're much better off just repairing the stuff you've got. Yeah. If you are going to buy it, please think carefully about it.
I think I read that they've got the single largest, in terms of textiles, the single largest repair factory in North America, just dedicated to, you send your clothes and they'll patch them up for you.
Not legends.
And they're all about engineering themselves out of your life a little bit. Like, buy one jacket from us.
Yeah, and then and we'll never see you again. Yeah, yeah.
If you're in the market for a jacket, get one. Like, you know, it's good quality stuff. Mm. It's made the right way. Mm. It treats people right. So it is expensive, but you will buy one.
Yeah.
And you're done.
And there's a lot of us because they're a global market.
And
so
they're so cool.
That's a good tactic.
I love them as a brand. Like,
they're awesome.
It is a little bit more outdoor wear and sort of a little bit tramp adjacent or camping adjacent. Yeah. But man, I just think
they're
the coolest brand.
It's not all occasions.
Brand.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
No, we've got some cool examples. Should we go through some?
Go through it. I don't have much on this, so.
There's Kowtow.
How do you spell that?
Kowtow.
Oh, my wife buys them.
She's onto it. Oh, yeah. That's your fashion representative, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the relationship.
Absolutely.
Recreate. Wear. Actually, yeah. I don't know how you say that because it's got the hyphen in the middle of it.
Say again.
Wear. Wear.
Oh, that's wear. Clever.
Maggie Marilyn's also awesome. Karen Nathan. And then Untouched World as well. And you know what? So a lot of those guys, they're not necessarily like your big box. Again, it might not be everything for all occasions. But I think like buying new is very problematic. And if you're going to buy new, then yeah, you do. You put the effort in and you find these companies that are doing some cool stuff. And you might be paying a bit more. Mm. But it's like, over and over again, that's what we've been saying is the issue, isn't it? Is that things are just so cheap. We don't, the quality's not really that great. We're going through things faster than what we ever intended to. They don't quite meet up to our expectations. So if you're buying something that's been made really, really well, and if it, you know, it's like with anything, when it costs you an arm and a leg, you really look after it.
Yeah.
You really
and
look
you love
after
it.
Yeah, you do. And you don't want to give it up in a year's time or whatever. And yeah, you're a bit more cautious and
Even
that question of asking yourself, will it date? You know, I think particularly with women's fashions, there can be some really weird stuff with like holes in weird places or whatever.
Very fashion forward.
Yeah, and you're like, it's very trendy, but it's like really, they're just not designed to
fashion
be.
Fashion is temporary, style is forever.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Get stylish stuff.
Trendy is close to trashy. But I mean, so you've got style, and then you've got fashion, and then kind of I just think of like that trendy thing as almost like one past fashion as well. It's like getting to that really, really quick, fast stuff.
There's honestly a lot of people who have put a lot of time and energy into trying to get money out of you in the fashion industry, and
playing on our insecurities.
The one tip that kept everyone said it, and it's like, yeah, of course, just buy less is the umbrella. Just please try and buy less stuff. And there's lots of different ways to attack that. And one interesting technique, because I bloody love shopping. I love a shop. I love online shopping.
Tim?
I do. It's just not clothes, other stuff. So one good tip that I heard is you put something in your cart and you leave it there for X amount of time. So I've heard like 1 month or 2 weeks, and then put a thing in your calendar, come back to it, look in 2 weeks and actually make
That's
the decision
a great
if
idea.
You want it.
Mm.
It takes a, well, Di was talking about that, I think, Di Hemwood, when we had him on.
Mm.
It takes away that kind of impulsive purchasing behavior that we're constantly doing.
Mm.
But like, you know, you go into these stores and everything has been engineered to make you, it's the peppiness of all the salespeople there who are just like jumping up, ready to help you with anything. The type of music that they play, really high tempo, like EDM music.
Yeah.
It's the way they've lit the place. It's the way that everything's laid out is totally to separate you from your money. So just remember that. Shopping is fun. And like, I get it, man. Shopping's fun. And fashion
shopping
is fun.
Shopping endorphins.
Totally. It's a real thing. And that's why I'm like loath to just lay a bad thing after bad thing on this episode, because ultimately, like, it's a fun thing and it's a very human thing, and I get that, but it is, you need to know super destructive, this fast fashion thing, and there is a better way that we could be doing it.
Mm.
So please buy less, and when you are buying, do what Waveney said. Good on you.
Yeah, good on you, app. And then just, I guess, it's sort of what we've been saying, maybe just to sum up, just make that connection every time you buy, that it's like, and then because we've got such a disconnect from our head, that when we're engaged with something like this and we're going, yep, we're nodding our head and we can all see it, it all makes sense. But then it's like, I don't know, it's your daughter's wedding or your kid's fundraiser, or we just instantly put it into a different component part of our head.
Yeah.
And we're not thinking, oh, is that fair trade organic? Is it, yeah. What's the environmental footprint of it? We just don't. It's just gone. So it's somehow... How do you make that? How do you get rid of that disconnect?
Resonate in your head. Let it marinate in your brain. And, you know, these ideas, they seep in as long as you keep thinking about them, I think.
Mm. And the other thing, I think, because for myself personally, I would be buying new, less than 10% of the time. It's the big release valve on all of this is op shopping.
Yeah.
It's just that turns something that is tricky and expensive to do ethically into something that's fun and cheap.
Yeah.
So to me, op shopping's a big win-win. And the only thing I would add to that would be, don't go thinking that if you're buying new, that you can be just dumping your clothes to charities and that's sort of absolving you of any part of this.
Yeah, we won't get into that because we're kind of wrapping up, but there's some horrible stats about how much of that actually goes to people and how much gets into landfills.
Exactly, they're basically overwhelmed and a lot of it's just getting landfilled.
Yeah.
And bizarrely, a garment emits more than its own weight in CO2s when it's landfilled.
That's so. What?
I don't understand how that happens, but.
Yeah.
It's.
I guess if it's made of like petrocarbons that have been processed, maybe it's sort of reflective of.
Oh, I guess it's because it's finding the oxygen somehow.
So then it's
taking the carbon and. Anyway.
We're not scientists, as you may be able to tell. But.
It's very B grade science.
Yeah. Those are your tips. Try and buy less if you can. Go op shopping. Use good on you.
Yes, good on you. Oh, and the other guys to check out.
Buy some linen. Get your hemp.
The other guys to check out are fashionrevolution.org.
Oh, yeah.
They are, if you've got a bit of an activist in you, or even if you're just wanting to connect with others, look at events, that kind of stuff, those guys do some really cool stuff. There's Fashion Revolution in New Zealand as well. You can find them on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And they just do cool stuff. Like every year they do a Fashion Revolution Week to commemorate that Rana Plaza disaster. And they are awesome.
Great.
And there's another event too that you could get along to, Fashion Week, if they haven't already sold out. And that is in the Auckland Town Hall on the 31st of August, part of Fashion Week. And it's called Fashion in Focus, where they've got four amazing speakers, actually, for some of the guys we've mentioned. Tickets are only $45. So you'll be looking at talking to... Koto, Maggie Marilyn, Kerry Nathan and Untouched World, and then also you get all the bells and whistles with the broader week as well. I think you get into other stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you get some passes to stuff or whatever.
Sweet.
So
we'll
it's worth checking
that
out. Yeah.
Nice one. Well, I'm off to not buy any clothes now.
Yeah, I'm off to not do anything like that either.
All right, have fun out there, folks. Fashion's fun, shopping's fun, but you know, keep the stuff in mind.
Keep it real.
And we'll catch you on the next episode of How to Save the World. Thanks again to our wonderful sponsor, Etiq. Etiq are a zero-waste beauty company dedicated to ridding the world of plastic waste.
Woo. Get yourself or someone you love some Etiq products from etiqueworld.com.